Welcome to On the Brink, a fresh lens to take you and your business to new heights. Hi, I'm Andy Simon. I'm your host today. And as you know, my job is to help you see, feel, and think in new ways so you can change. And in these very fast-changing times that we're in now, you're going to need a hand. So I've been out looking for the right people to come and give you some perspective on what it means to redesign life during a pandemic and all the ways that we're trying to respond to it. I went back to September 2017 when Adam Gamwell gave me a wonderful podcast. He's an anthropologist, as I am, and he too likes to work with companies to redesign their strategies, their relationships with their employees and their customers, redefine their stories and how to communicate them. So let me tell you about Adam, and then we'll have Adam tell you about how design thinking may help you redesign your life. As a design anthropologist, Adam knows that humans want to build products, services, and systems. That's how humans really organize themselves to get along. That's what makes us so remarkable. And he helps them do it using a design system process of really good calculated steps on how you go about thinking about a design, testing it, prototyping it, and seeing what actually works. He co-founded Missing Link Studios, which is a research and design collaboration. It uses design thinking as well to create strategy, media, and experiences. And out of all of his work, he has a podcast called This Anthro Life, which I've been on and you would enjoy as well. Check it out because it's very conversational and it really helps you see, feel, and think in new ways. So Adam, thank you for joining me today.
Yeah, Andy, thanks. Great to be here once again. Nice to see you and glad we could have this conversation. It's an exciting time. It's a strange time, right?
Well, as I read through all the stories about pandemics going back, whether it's the Black Death or the bubonic plague or cholera, Ebola, now, humans seem to have a common reaction to them. They don't quite know what to do. They flee it. They fear it. They appease it. They isolate. They don't know what to do. But as a design thinker, what are your thoughts about how do we redesign our life during this time, not knowing what's coming next? Give our listeners some thought. First, let's talk about what is design thinking anyway? Let's start there.
Yeah, that's a great question. And so design thinking is both a mindset and a method that is, you know, taking some of the way people have thought about design comes from things like industrial design or architecture of creating buildings or creating products, physical products, and then has kind of moved in service. So all of these different ways of doing design can follow a similar kind of mindset and methodology. And so design thinking basically is a, you know, it can be between a 3 and a 7 step process, depending on how detailed you want to get. But the way I like to think about design thinking is that based on understanding the people that you're going to be designing for, getting their input and understanding from their perspective, you know, the problems that they face, or I like to even think about it as co-designing and co-defining kind of the problems that they face. And then, you know, iterating and coming to different solutions and then helping pare down, select what the best ones are, then testing those with people, and then finally validating them. And then, of course, the cycle can continue, which is great. So it's outcome-oriented and process-oriented in terms of it gives us a chance to continually refine something, which I think is super cool. And as an anthropologist, I like this too, because we are premised on studying human societies and culture, but to design, it gives us as anthropologists another tool with which to help people create change, right, and create positive change and impact in their communities, or if they want to make a new product or service or connect with their customers better. And so that to me, I mean, is really fun, just basically to have like this systems level societal thinking from anthropology, and then this nice methodology that's designed around to people getting their problems, helping them come up with solutions together.
So in this time of rapid change where people aren't quite sure what to do, what do you see happening and how can this process maybe give them some tools to use? Share with us.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think that, you know, we are in this, you know, crazy time, right? Where, as you said, I really liked your kind of outline there of the idea that we've seen a ton of different kinds of pandemics. You know, pandemics and viral or bacterial outbreaks are not new, right? What is new is, on one level, how frequently and how whole, like in the whole sense that people travel around the world, right? And that, so we move around much more. And so things like COVID-19 or the SARS outbreak before that, or MERS outbreak, you know, in the past 20 years, have, you know, we're increasingly see these viruses or bacteria pandemics able to move more because we move more, right? And so part of it, I think, is interesting because one of the other pieces that you and I had noted in the conversation before is that people tend to game when they think it's always comes from the outside, right? The virus or the bacteria, the pandemic is from somewhere else. And it's interesting because what that then tells us is that humans, we have evolved with the form of what we call tribe. I don't mean that in a bad sense, but that we tend to think in group, right? We try to define we are based on who our group of people are that we identify with. And then we also have kind of the outright, the people that are not of our tribe. And, so when it comes to something like a pandemic, it feels interesting because it is this external feeling for most people, right? I don't know, for example, how people in Wuhan, China feel, if they themselves said this is from external or from here. But, minus that, in general, people tend to think it's an external force. And I think that was a really interesting piece that you mentioned, because again, it helps us understand how we as people kind of shape our identities and our communities. And then when something like a pandemic erodes those borders immeasurably, right? There's the COVID-19 is the worst example of this because it travels so easily across borders, regardless of who we are, whatever tribe you might ascribe to. And so there's a really interesting space right now of what I like to think of as opportunity that, since we have had to have such rapid change of behavior, things like distancing, most of us have to work from home now, And so that's been a huge challenge. I mean, one of the big challenges I definitely feel the most for are parents with young children and having to balance both childcare and demands. And so a colleague of mine just had a baby in December talking about this. And I was kind of saying, basically I feel for you. I mean, I can't imagine how hard it is to both have a few month old baby and also be trying to do full-time work. And she says, the funny thing is it's not that I need to change the way that I'm thinking about work, but we need to redesign the way that we do work, right? We have to raise families. That's actually the point of if you want, what our genes want to pass themselves on. And so raising families is part of that. And so when we make work that gets in the way of that, we need to think about is it my bad that I have to be at home and raise a child now? No, it's actually, we need to rethink work, right? So that got me thinking that we have these opportunities like this to rethink, to redesign the ways that we do what we do. And so part of it, I think, is this question of, concretely family life. And what does it mean to, both have a space in the home that one could work and raise families? And then also, how do we redesign things, expectations in workplaces for people that have to do this, right? I mean, another example that was funny is my wife was saying she was on a meeting call with a bunch of people. She works at a biotech, and one of the head honchos was leading the meeting. And then of course you think about the business honcho that everyone's like, okay, well, we defer to the head honcho, that they're leading the charge. And then he's talking, and then behind him his 3-year-old comes up on over his back and is like, "Daddy, you promised that we're gonna make a Lego castle," right? And it's so funny because that's what life is, right? And to remember that that's actually there, and so there's and to be reminded that that's really how most people live their lives. The CEO is also making Legos with their kid on the weekend or something, or during a meeting, right? And that's an important thing, an inflection point for us to remember that, while we have things like business practices that feel like they don't change very often, right? And you yourself have written about this too, that culture change is hard for organizations to do and to manage. Yet when something like a pandemic comes and just totally blows out of the water, you can't do what you used to do, right? And then we all still somehow are able to adapt and laugh at the idea that, yes, of course your 3-year-old's going to climb onto your back while you're trying to do your meeting,
It's interesting listening to you because from a redesign, she raised some really important questions. What matters? And unless those kids can, in fact, be raised and grow to be healthy adults, what will happen? I have a friend who counsels parents, and most of them who are really coming to her for more counseling or their teenagers are parents with teenagers. And because the independence that a teenager usually gets when they reach that point is to go off with their friends and begin to establish their independence. And so on the one hand, talking about a new baby, on the other hand, you now have teenagers at home. My daughter has 2 at home. And what she's finding is they're becoming perfectly reliant on their own, and they're building independent solutions. And it's sort of interesting watching and listening to them do this without a bunch of close friends hanging out together. One goes off biking and the other takes a walk with the dog, and they do it because my daughter and my son-in-law are both working at home. And so it's not like they can take them. So we're going to have to do it on our own. That's not so bad. It's sort of a new set of, I'll call them competencies. They're even learning how to be competent in school without a whole lot of teacher time. They are underwhelmed by their teacher's adaptability to this new world and are teaching the teachers how to teach. They're learning almost on their own. Now this changes all the balances and everything, doesn't it? A whole new rebalance structure. Your thoughts?
Yeah, no, that's a great point too. And I like that this concept of competencies here. It's important, right, to think about what are the practices that people can adapt to and change and take on in this space. And the teenage years are a really great time to think about this, because that is when you know, young adults or kids, depending on how you want to define them, you know, are adolescents, I guess, are you know, gaining, the sense of independence. So like, I know how to ride my bike by myself and I'm capable of doing that. Or I want to go visit my friends or whatever it is, you know. And that is really interesting to them to kind of think about how they gain the sense of independence and competencies in this practice. But then also a really, really compelling idea that students are teaching teachers how to teach. And that to me, you know, speaks to the question of, you know, both how are teachers, I guess, putting together curriculum, you know, but the other side of it is really what does it mean to deliver that content in a way that is engaging, you know, that feels at home digitally. And I think that's a really interesting space. I was talking to a colleague of mine, Gary David, who's a sociologist, the other day about this. And because he teaches full time, and he was teaching, he had to shift his classes online when COVID-19 broke out. And he's the only professor that I've talked to that has this idea, you know, for him, his inspiration actually is Real Time with Bill Maher, you know, the show. And the idea of what does it mean to have an engaging conversation that happens digitally, right? And, you know, so rather than just kind of, you know, retooling a lecture or a slide deck with recording of the content, you know, talking over it, what does it mean to actually think with stand-up comedians and political commentators and other kinds of talking heads that are not out of place on Netflix or YouTube? And, you know, how does education fit in with that? I think that's a really interesting question, because again, that to me got this idea of like, what does it mean to redesign our competencies in this level, right? Educational competencies. But then also, you know, again, from a design thinking perspective, if you think about what is it that teenagers or, you know, high schoolers, middle schoolers are looking for in terms of engaging in part of their learning. So you're going to see them on YouTube. You're going to see them watching Netflix. And so what is it that these platforms are doing? Obviously, a professor can't go make Game of Thrones the educational show, you know, but there's no reason that you couldn't learn from talking styles, right? You couldn't learn from thinking about, you know, how do people put together a 5 or 10 minute segment that's like succinct and to the point, and it tells you the person's perspective too. And that's it. You know, it's not a long drawn out, like, let's just figure this out together kind of thing. And that's a really interesting idea of, you know, what does it mean to do that for students? And so it is interesting because, you know, when you think about this from a design perspective, it does involve like using new technologies, using new mediums, you know, basically drawing inspiration from like YouTube or whatever. YouTube personalities. But then there is the other side. The side of me is honestly also thinking about what are the power structures and different circumstances that allow professors the time or interest to be able to do kind of adaptation, right? It's like not everybody can do that. Not everybody should have that also, you know, because it's one of these, you know, if you're already a busy professor, teacher, high school teacher, you know, trying to put your class together, And you're also raising a family at home, you know, it's of course not fair to then require you to like, well, you should be, you know, get like Netflix, you know, be a stand-up comedian. And so it's interesting to think about too, like who has access to these kinds of other media and has the time, you know, the time as a piece to do that.
There are two or three things that pop in as you're talking, one of which is I would urge the teachers as well as the business managers to rethink exactly the power relationship you're thinking about. We know that people learn and do best when they are experiential learners, not when they're talked to, but when they have to do it. And so if my granddaughter said the movie she had us watch was really terrible, my thought was, well, maybe you could actually produce your own movie and send it back to her with the observation of what you've learned by not necessarily watching the movie, but by creating some story. Mm-hmm. This is storytelling time. And as you know, the way we create a reality is that brain takes the data and creates a story. And the reason that things are so unsettled now is that the story in your mind about a daily life has been totally disrupted. You don't know what the habits are, and there's no new story yet. But it's an absolutely fascinating time to watch what could be created as we do this. I'll shift our conversation slightly to the businesses that I have as clients and their employees who are working remotely. And because, like the adolescent, the folks I'm coaching, who do a lot of executive coaching, they're all stymied by the lack of routine. And they feel like they have to be on the emails all the time to demonstrate that they are working. And we're having some interesting storytelling conversations about who's asking you to be on the emails all the time. Well, nobody really. I said, and would anybody who matters know if you weren't on the emails all the time? Well, no. I said, so who's becoming addicted to these emails to demonstrate you are competent working remotely except you? And they sort of like all went this, aha, oh, we've done it to ourselves. Well, in the vacuum, you filled it with a fake story about I'm going to be productive and I'm taking emails at 10 o'clock at night. I said, but why? And it was one of those nobody could answer, but the fill in the emptiness became actually an addiction that was leading to an overwhelming fear that they couldn't get the job done on the one hand, and they had no time for themselves on the other, self-induced pain. And so, you know, as you're thinking about redesign, help them think through what could be better. And then we can sort of share some of my own observations. Your thoughts, please.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And I think that's a great point that, and as humans, but also as business leaders too, right? There is, I appreciated your phrasing, the fill in the emptiness there. Because I think you're absolutely that, like, you know, we as humans are like meaning making is what one of the things that we do, right? And so we need it as a way to both take information like our senses and you know, jumbles around and comes back out, and right, and stories are one way that we organize that, right? We organize and we think narratively, right? I mean, as just a side example, I think one of the things that's really compelling is there's some interesting psychological research about infants and babies and why little kids don't seem to have any memory. They don't remember things when they're younger. And it has to do with the fact that they have no narrative memory at this point. They can't yet put together a sequence of events and understand the relationship between them. And so that like filters all the way through to being a business leader too, right? And the idea that we can't really make sense of an event unless we can put it in some level of a sequence that has both a cause and effect and what might come next. And so a pandemic is a really challenging moment because our common narratives of productivity and being able to say, this is, you know, yeah, you can see me working, you can see my competencies as a leader, you know, become invisible, right? Because you're not there anymore. And then, so how do you do that, right? Then you kind of fill in your own narrative yourself. And that's a really challenging thing because then I've done this too, you know, I imagine many of us has, that you end up working until 7 or 8 p.m. just because.
Right? It's like, I like your because.
Yeah,
right. They can't see your shoulders shrug, but that's exactly what they say because I guess because. So what do we do when we fill in a vacuum?
Yeah, you know, and so that's interesting. I mean, especially for leaders too, because you know, they're the ones that help set and guide the culture of an organization, right? And so I think part of it is that if you are a business leader, I think it is your responsibility be open about rethinking what productivity means, right? And that doesn't mean the clock. And it means being conscious of the hours that you're working, right? And it means being conscious of the practices that you're doing, right? If you're on email all the time, or if you feel the need to, like, if you don't have a meeting every day, you're somehow doing something wrong. if you check out your organization, of course, you should meet with your executive team or whoever else, you know, that through your employees. But at the same time, you know, it is also about building trust that the machine, we as people, like, not only are we good at, you know, designing stories, do things, we're good at keeping up with the machine too, right? And I think a lot of people, you know, derive meaning out of work, right? Like we find a sense of purpose in the work that we do. And so, I think this is especially true of business leaders, right? And so I sometimes wonder if part of it is that, you know, when you can't see how your organization is running, you can't talk as often with your colleagues, your executive, your employees. And then you might feel this personal sense of like, well, I don't know if the machine is actually working, right? And so then I need to check in. I need to make sure that it's going. But part of it is like, you know, my hope is that you have trust in your organization, right? That, you know, and if you do, that's part of your leadership strategy, right? It's part of the culture that you yourself
Yes.
instill in the organization. And I think that's really important to, like, take a moment to reflect. I mean, this is, I'm actually almost mindfulness practices. Like you may think of meditation or checking in with oneself, you know. And one of the common practices, so there's a mindfulness app I really enjoy called Headspace that I know millions of people use. And it's a meditation, you know, guided meditation software. And it's interesting because I was running through some of the different programming, especially one on anxiety around the time that COVID was hitting, because I knew that I was feeling anxious, but I imagine many people around the world, because my narrative was shifting, right? Do I have enough groceries now? I never thought about that, right? Do I have enough toys? I hear freaking out about that, right? And checking with my business partner on our project, doing XYZ, right? You know, I mentioned to you before too, I was working on a research project, out in the field, and I had to just return home because, the offices were closing where we were doing organizational research with employees. And, you know, and so that changed all of that. Right. And so it was interesting with Headspace and kind of thinking about what does a mindfulness practice have to do with this? There's this interesting idea of noticing, right? And simply what this means is if you find yourself feeling something or thinking something, it's just be that level of just saying, I feel a certain way. I feel anxious. I feel like I need to check in. I'm thinking about checking in with my organization. And having a sense of noticing when one feels those things is actually a moment to pause and reflect on your own narrative, right? And I think what's really helpful for business leaders is to think about that's how they can kind of pause and take a moment to think about their organization, right? So it's not just, I'm freaking out. I need to check in on everybody. Let me pause and say, I'm thinking that. I'm feeling that. But let me think about how does that affect my organization? If I'm checking in all the time, I'm setting a culture that everybody needs to be checking in all the time. I'm setting a culture of slight paranoia, right? Rather than trust. And so I think that there's a really interesting opportunity space there, honestly, to when you think about narratives and how you redesign it, is just to pause to notice what are you feeling as a leader? Yeah. And then think about how is that affecting how I'm communicating with my organization?
Now a word from our sponsors, Simon Associates Management Consultants. Simon Associates is us. And we love to help you see, feel, and think in new ways to help you and your business grow. We specialize in applying the tools and methods of anthropology, but we're also entrepreneurs and business builders. And we like to share our experience and expertise with you. So if you're stalled or stuck or starting up, give us a buzz and let's see if we can help you as well. You can learn all about us at simonassociates.net and read my book, learn about it at andysimon.com. Is a free chapter you can download and a toolkit you'll find very helpful. We're on Amazon and you can buy it as a book, an ebook, or even an Audible that I recorded myself. We look forward to hearing from you at simonassociates.net. info@simonassociates.net is right to us. Now back to our podcast.
But you're raising something extremely important because for the past forever, we got that affirmation through cultural habits. And we knew them really well. They were associated with the organization we were in. They were appropriate for that culture. Now, we don't know what are the appropriate signals. There's no mirror. And we don't know what is actually a good reflection of the culture that's emerging, where I don't have the past, but I don't have the present either. And so the idea of making it up by spending all this time on emails, and that demonstrates you're busy, is a filler. But now the leadership or the organization, remember, you know, I both know, if you don't tell people what to value, believe, and behave, they'll make it up. Mm-hmm. And there's a whole lot of making it up right now. So for business leaders who are listening, if you don't take control over the way in which you want your remote workforce to in fact engage, demonstrate they're actually getting things done and not by looking at their screen time, but what are going to be the key signals that your business is actually in fact doing business? And I think that's the scary part because they don't really know if it's doing business or not. Mm. And there's no easy way. I've urged my clients to set up morning huddles that everybody can come on a Zoom and check in with what's going on, issues they have, and be real. Be humans. Humans are social creatures. We're herd animals. In the absence of that, we're all in the equivalent of solitary confinement in a prison, which, if I understand it correctly, is the worst place to be. And that's where we all are now. So, you know, as you're thinking about redesigning our design, how do we create a new way of knowing that our business is doing business? It's sort of an interesting way of thinking about it.
Yeah, I really like that question. That's quite compelling. And You know, so to think about this too, right? I liked the notion too that you said that, again, like, we don't know what these signals are that says that business is happening or not. And so, I mean, one can check, you know, on a basic level, right? You know, reviewing what are your KPIs, you know, a certain profit or have a certain product get out or whatever, you know, what's your product development pipeline if you're making an app or something. And, you know, I think revisiting those and then thinking about, you know, what about the existing KPIs that we have require us to be in person and to understand how things are happening at an interpersonal level, right? Because I think you raise a really good point, Andy, that as social animals, we're actually trying to fill in the productivity work cycle thing with social interaction, right? Because it is hard for us in solitary confinement. You know, we're working at home and we're not used to it yet. We don't yet have Oculus Rifts and VR and everywhere we can just like be in a virtual space with each other. I don't know how that would work either, but you know, it's sometimes
a nice idea.
First talk to somebody, right? Versus just either only seeing them on email or a Slack message, you know? But I think, as you said, like the idea of having some kind of morning huddle with the team is a great idea because it's lets people, if you were hanging out in the break room or if you just, you know, checking in on your morning, oh, hey, how's your day yesterday? That's good. You know, I'm working on X, Y, and Z, but just kind of letting that human element be part of the interaction again too, because practices are nothing more than just a certain kind of formalized relationship, right? With a give and a take, a and if you will. So if we're finding ourselves not having the social part of that relationship and we're just going for the you know, supply demand side, it's confusing for us, you know,
yes.
Because we have, right, these interpersonals if we're at an office or if we're in a meeting. And so it's important to continue to have those, right? And I mean, part of it too, I think that why leaders would you know, not be afraid to be adaptive at this time, right? To like understand that your morning rituals, your morning meetings might need to change. For example, some organizations might need more hierarchy at this moment. They might need a little bit of control so people know, okay, how do I do this? What do I go, you know, how does this work? Or other organs may need more of a horizontal, right? Or a flat perspective that's saying, let's design this together. It just depends on, you know, the industry that somebody's working in. But I think that being adaptive right now is incredibly important. And that's working anyway, right? We are learning what it means to work from home.
You know, so, you and I both know that humans have evolved. You know, Joseph Heinrich's book, The Secret of Our Success, is how we have evolved through this co-evolution of both how we adapted and how we've changed the stories to adapt. I want to use that as a way of circling back, though, to design thinking. You started by talking about the process of design thinking. And I was curious whether that process could be of help to companies and people also in schools and elsewhere. But, you know, reflect back on whether that process has a particular power right now that people might find of value so that they had a way of addressing this a little less ad hoc, make it up, and a little bit more systematic. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that that's a wonderful point. And I think you're exactly right. Has a particular value right now in this moment as we need to kind of redefine practices as well as stories of happening. And so, yeah, I mean, well, right, to come back to what the framework design thinking is, right, that it's framed around empathy, people that you're designing for, and then involves co-iterating or like ideating, coming up with many kinds of solutions based on understanding what the problems are, and then choosing the best ones, and then helping, you know, prototype and figuring that we can make. And again, a prototype is not a working app. It can literally be, this is how we start a conversation, right? And just seeing how people respond to the way you start this conversation. And then coming back and then kind of testing that by putting it out in the real world, having people experience it, reflect on it, and then iterating it and refining it from there and just doing that cycle over again, you know? And so I think right now there is a particular power in that because thinking provides a methodology, narrative structure, if you to rethink about.
Yep.
And so I think that there's an incredible value of that, of helping, in this case, business leaders, we might think about figuring out who their key stakeholders are when it comes to their work, right? And I mean, obviously you might say, oh, it's employees and executive team. That might be an easy and a correct answer, you know? It could be suppliers, it could be vendors, right? It can be all these different kinds of different levels of people that might be important. So, you know, tool with design thinking besides the forward methodology are things like a stakeholder map, right? How do we understand who is essential to a certain process, who would be interesting to include, and who would be like impactful, but you know, they're not. And so there's a bunch of tools like this, stakeholder mapping, or you might hear from user experience, which also draws a lot from design thinking, is like a journey map, which is understanding somebody's experience across using a piece of software or going to a museum, or you know, getting onboarding as a new employee in this time. And so, and it but takes in account like the different channels they use, like working on Slack or Zoom or email. What kind of communication methods are they? How are they feeling across the process? And so to me, this really wonderful wealth of tools that helps people articulate and externalize their experiences that can be shared with others and then put into a framework that we can then, again, build a narrative around. And so yeah, in a broad stroke, that's what I think is incredibly helpful. I mean, I can give a brief example of, I've been doing some of this work for a little while, and part of this is around helping them rethink who they are, like what is their organizational culture and what is the kind of message that they want to share coming into this year. They've got some changes going on in the organization. I can't say too much right now, but they have some changes going on in the organization. And so they want to figure out how to be better tell a story of who we are. And so we're using this methodology to do stakeholder interviews, to talk with the employees and leadership and other stakeholders who we identify with them, and to get a sense of what's happening in the organization. How do people feel about, you know, what do they know about the organization? What do they think is great? Think is challenging about it? What do they want to see happen next? And we take all that and we triangulate these ideas across different stakeholders to get a sense of where the problem areas actually are, right? And as you know well too, a lot of that comes down to how do we define our culture, right? Meaning, what are the largely unconscious ways that our behavior and our values, and how do we keep those things in play, right? And realize they're organic. They're not static. It's not, you know, culture is not a thing that you just have, but you make it, right? And so design thinking fits so well in with this kind of work, I think, which is cool, because then it gives you this framework to understand stakeholders from their perspective and then translate that into a bunch of ideas to help them figure out how do we solve this problem, and then come up with a bunch of cool ideas and then test the best ones. And then you walk away with like a really cool product or idea that to tell that story in a much clearer way.
It's so exciting always to share with you. As we're beginning to wrap up, a couple of things that you would like our listeners to remember, because they often remember the final ending better than the beginning, but some things you might want to make sure that they walk away with and think about during these periods of rapid change.
People might laugh at me, but because I'm home, I've been doing some more reading some novels. And so I read Dan Brown's novel. You know who wrote The Da Vinci? I read one of his latest novels called Origin a few weeks ago. And it was funny because I you know, again, these novels, one could say they're stupid, one could say they're awesome. It depends on your own perspective. But there's a really interesting idea. So the main character, Robert Langdon, is a symbologist, which we as anthropologists call a semiotician, right? We signs of society. And so every once in a while in these kind of books, there's these fun little like quips of, here's an interesting thing to think about. And so I was thinking about this yesterday talking to my wife, is that you know, people are searching for meaning right now because we're in this unprecedented, strange time. And we don't really know what is happening, or more importantly, for most of us emotionally, we don't know why this is happening. Now, the hard thing is, from a perspective of nature, there is no why, right? This is just the next evolution of this virus and this collection of molecules that came together and it moved and it happens to be able to, you know, jump into our lungs and do a bunch of nasty stuff, you know? There is no why on that level. What's interesting though is that, so this is what we call a pattern, right? There's a thing that we have had MERS and SARS, and now we have COVID-19, which is just SARS-2, right? So it is literally, it's the same respiratory infection that, you know, comes from different viruses and bacteria. And so this is a pattern that's happening, right? And that's scary because it's going to happen again in 10 to 20 years. And however, what it is not is what we might call a code. And so the difference between a pattern and a code is, a pattern is like repeated activity or something like that. A code, though, by definition, has to carry some kind of information and tell us, you know, there's a meaning behind this thing. A lot of people right now are searching for codes in this. And that, I think, is a moment I want to caution people to say, don't jump into saying, oh, there's a certain reason that this is happening or not happening. That's a code, right? What we're seeing is a pattern. And so, you know, from a scientific perspective, it's important to be able to differentiate these two, but realize as humans, we live in codes, right? Codes are our meaning, they're our stories, right? And so part of it, I'm just saying, as a moment of reflection and pause, understand if you're looking for a pattern or a code when things are happening, when things like this are happening. And that's a really empowering moment to be able to, like, let me just stop and reflect on, how am I constructing my own narrative right now? How is the news constructing the narrative, right? How am I thinking about my business right now? Am I making up codes? Am I saying, here's the meaning of why people are not more productive? Or am I noticing a pattern that's actually an opportunity to then actually use design thinking to rethink, to redesign that issue?
If I hear you correctly, there's a pattern that is without purpose or meaning. There's nothing in those viruses that's purposeful, designed to come and disrupt humans. Mm-hmm. But we are an animal, and it does like to jump around the same way the flea used to come off the black rat and jump onto people and create bubonic plague. And everyone tried to find the religious meaning from it, the miasma coming off the earth and find the bad people. Everybody was bad. Half the population died. But now what's the meaning of this one, and how come we didn't anticipate? Because we sort of did. It's always so interesting trying to get meaning on nature. And nature has a meaning all of its own that may have no meaning for us. We're just part of nature. It is humbling though, isn't it?
It is. It is. And I think like there's, you know, power in humility, right? And there's power in us just saying, well, we don't control the universe. We never did. I mean, well, we tried to. We invented a bunch of religions. I'm not going to say whether they're real or not, but I mean, at least we know from the anthropology of religion, right? If there are larger truths, right, they're at least at some level human truths, right?
Adam, it's always so much fun to talk with you. For our listeners, I'm going to wrap up our conversation today. It's with Adam Glanwell, and Adam has been absolutely a wonderful conversation to bring to you around the code, the patterns, the meaning of this COVID virus and the disruptions to our work, our daily life, our families, and everything that we thought to be true. And that's often the hardest part. I often say that the only truth is there is no truth, then that is something that you're coming to grips with today. I love your emails. They've been coming from across the world. It's really a privilege and a pleasure to capture them and see how to be of help. You can send them to info@andysimon.com. or info@simonassociates.net. And of course, we're all over the web, and there's a toolkit there for you to try and use. And I like Adam's design thinking toolkit. This, maybe it's a great time to redesign what you have and how it's doing. We love you coming. Thank you so much. I understand that people are coming to us now for perceptions of the future. And I'm sort of humbled by, I'm not quite sure I know what the future is, other than we're going to make it up. And if we're really clever, we may listen to those teenagers who already are making it up and seeing new ways to live in this crazy world we're in. Hey, have a great day. Thanks again. Bye now.